Hello and welcome to this podcast. Yes, I have a voice. My name is Ruth Lewis-Cost and I'm a caregiver and I am blessed to be looking after my elderly parents. I started this podcast to remind ourselves that looking after those in need is a privilege. As unpaid caregivers, we need to have a voice. We need to be able to shout loud and be proud of our status. And caregiving has no age. People of all ages are caregivers. This is my way of supporting you all emotionally and practically with tools from other caregivers on how to find the joy in your situation and make amazing memories. So let's dive into this week's episode. Hello again, my friends. And today I'd like to welcome Roz Clark, who is here with me. Now, Roz is a transformational strategy coach and she works with high net worth women. She's also a singer and she's mum to David Emmanuel, and he's been diagnosed with autism. So, Roz, that's an awful lot of things to do. So how do you fit that all in?
That is an absolute great question. And it's so funny that you started with that, because a lot of my work is around creating balance and figuring out, you know, who you are and how you show up in the world, and that we don't get caught up in just one title or one idea or one sense of who we are. And so it's really about like being fully present with all of who I am and all of what I do.
And as far as your caregiving history, your mum to David Emmanuel, so, and I believe he's in his 30, isn't he?
He'll be 30 at the end of the year. He's 29 right now.
Fantastic, fantastic. And you've obviously been a caregiver to him all his life.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell us more about that.
So David Emmanuel had his first seizure when he was 8 months old. And what I can tell you is you have never seen something so small shake so hard. And so that was like my first, you know, we're pediatric intensive care wards and being transported by, you know, EMT and all of that. And so that is what like made my world go whoop. So it was, you know, I was actually, you know, what I believed on the track of being a international classical soprano. And then, like I said, you know, got married. David Emmanuel is my second child. And here we are with the first seizure at 8 months old. And so subsequently, after that, he was diagnosed with autism a little bit later than most people, because he was seizing so much. We didn't know if, you know, seizing was holding back language or whatever. And so it was an ongoing process and just, you know, settling in for a long and bumpy and sometimes, you know, really frightening ride. And yet, and still at the same time, it's been an amazing journey in so many ways.
And that first time when he was 8 months old, that must have been ever so scary.
Yeah, it really was. Like I said, you know, to see this beautiful little, you know, beautiful young baby with a head full of hair just shaking like you've never seen in your life. And, you know, and just like, what in the world is going on and what is happening? And fortunately, it's in my inherent nature. I am a problem solver. I am somebody who does not freak out. And yet still, this is your baby. And what I knew was he needed me to be the best version of myself at that time. And I really learned that over time, because one of the big things, especially going into emergency rooms, you've got these people that are like, get that, da, 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 move the mom away. And it's like, wait, no, mom's not moving. And so to be a participant in his healing, to be a participant in his care, I had to be strong, and yet still I had to be calm at the same time. And so that's a really important thing to consider in emergencies, because everybody gets caught up in the emotion of the emergency. And what you really have to be is really clear on what you want the outcome to be.
That's just such amazing advice, actually. And very hard to do in the moment when you're in this kind of panic mode, when you're not thinking straight. And as you say, it was kind of, it's part of your character, but so many people just, they fall apart and then they think about it. It's amazing that you were able to do that. So as we said, David Emmanuel is 29. How is he? What's he doing?
He's amazing. I mean, he's just the coolest individual. He's on the lower functioning end of the autism spectrum. So he's nonverbal, still does have seizures, but not as many. And they don't go into what's called status epileptus, where they won't stop. And so over this journey, what I really love about him is he has this incredible sense of self. He knows who he is. He knows that he's handsome, and he knows that he's loved, and he knows that he's funny and mischievous. And so he has this incredible sense of self. And I think that part of that has come from my being very intentional about not letting him become his diagnosis. So I'm like really even very, very intentional about how I language it. So, you know, some people say, you know, my son is this, my son is that, or, you know, even people who in our own lives, like my arthritis, you know, I don't use language like that because it doesn't define him or limit him or limit us. So I'm very, very conscious of the power of language and thought and how we show up in the world. And so because I was intentional in seeing David Emmanuel, the person, and loving David Emmanuel, the mischievous character, and seeing his characteristics, because like I said, so many times people only see the diagnosis. And so we limit people's potential and we limit their humanity when we become engaged in somebody who is having a different life experience.
I think that's so amazing. And I love that you have done that to create a person that people recognize totally without even questioning about, you know, any diagnosis that might be there. I just think that's so beautiful and something that we should all take note of, actually, because the things that I've learned about anyway is that we are, you know, we're not our bodies. There is so much more to us. So yes, when you say my name is, or I am Ruth, for example, I'm not. I'm actually an inner being here, and I don't have a name. And Ruth is my body.
Yes.
And we are all the same when we, you know, even if we don't realize it, that's it. We are just beautiful beings inside a body having a human experience.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny, you saying that made me think of the late Sidney Poitier and one of his famous lines, they call me Mr. Tibbs. Not I am Mr. Tibbs, they call me Mr. Tibbs. And in me showing up as that, and even in him saying and delivering that line with such power and gravitas, what he really was saying is the essence of who I am is how I'm telling you this, how I'm showing you this. And that is the amazing thing. Like you're saying, when we understand that we are a complete being that transcends body and identifications. And if we were connected more to that, I believe that we would be connected more to one another and be able to achieve so much more.
I totally agree. I agree. You know, I actually read a book, just a little aside, I read a book decades ago, and I cannot remember the name of it. I just remember it being a book that was almost in pieces. Somebody gave it to me. And I remember in that book, so this was in the, would have been in the 19, probably in the 1980s. And there was a lot about it, lots of, you know, outer body experiences and things like that, talking about what they knew about the brain then. So obviously that's all out of date. But the one thing that they were talking about was this writer was saying how he actually envisaged and could see how we would be communicating telepathically at some point in the future. And I've never forgotten that. And I absolutely, with what you say, I absolutely adhere to that. But I do know, because it's like that instinct we already have. When you meet someone, you get an instinct about them. It could be low level, it could be high level, whatever it is, but you just have this knowing of who they are, whether you like them or not, whether you're attracted to them or not. It's this thing that goes on. And that is, to me, the telepathic essence of us that we have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and so people give it so many different names, your aura, your spirit, your soul, whatever that is. And yet, like you're saying, the way that we, you know, some of the language is vibrational, you know, because everything is energy and everything is moving and molecules are always moving. And so the way that we do tune into, and if we take the time to show up, if we take the time, which goes back to your first question of how do you fit it all in? And I think the most important thing is being fully present in the moment that you're having, in the experience that you're having. Who do I want to be in this moment? How do I want to show up in this moment? How do I serve in this moment? And so even with this conversation, not like, oh, when's my turn to jump in and talk? Really listening and hearing what you're saying and saying, oh, wow, yeah, we think the same way, or we experience things the same way, or maybe there's a moment that we'll say, oh, wow, I didn't think about that. And yet, if I'm not present with you when you're speaking, when I'm not really tuned into what it is that you're saying, then I miss this most amazing opportunity to be connected to another amazing being.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. So moving on with your journey, you are still a singer, but you were having a really, really strong career as a singer long before you had children. But tell us a little bit about that.
So it was super fun. I mean, from the time I was a little girl, like I am an artist at the very core of my being. So that part, like I can say, and I am around that, because it just is what lights me up and how I show up in the world. And I have been that since I was a little girl, just singing and dancing and all of that. And I just always wanted to be on stage. And I grew up in a blue collar working class neighborhood in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And like, people don't do that where I'm from. And yet and still, I just knew that that's what I was called to, and knew that that's what I wanted, and believed that that's what I could have. And so, you know, typical quintessential African-American singer. I grew up in a Baptist church, singing in the choir. When I was 13, there was a music program called Centers for the Musically Talented. And I auditioned for that program. And I'll never forget, I sang Corner of the Sky from Pippin, because Ben Vereen was one of my favorite performers then. And even though I was a female, I sang that song. And then after I sang it, they asked me to run scales. And so I kept going higher and higher and higher. And they said, oh, you're an opera singer. And I was like, a who? A what?
You know, like, a who?
You know, I thought I was going to grow up and be Patti LaBelle or Diana Ross and change gowns every two songs, you know, whatever that was. And I actually did incorporate that into my classical career. And yet I didn't know what that was. And so I fought it for a while. And then when I auditioned for colleges, every college accepted me in the arts program, in their opera program. And I was like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. And so just, again, following my heart, following my passion, following that calling in me that was longing to be lived. And yet when things shifted, because I turned 21 in Paris, singing in, you know, the great cathedral, sang at Notre Dame, and was touring with the classical choir and touring Paris, touring France. And yet, like I said, when David Emmanuel had his first seizure, and then, you know, another one came in just a few weeks, and was like, oh, okay, this journey is going to shift. And so I had to be open to the shift and still can stay connected to the creator in me, and finding a way to incorporate both of those into my experience.
And you do still sing though, don't you?
I do still sing. I don't sing as much. And I mean, obviously with COVID and things closing down, that was a big, you know, that was a big shift. And more importantly, I walked away from a toxic and dysfunctional marriage after 30 years. And so in the walking away, you know, I was being very adult about all of it and thought it would be fine. And it wasn't. And I basically had to leave quickly for my safety and my well-being. And so I had to make a decision of what I can do to, first of all, replace the income that I had, because I had given up my career on the big terms. You know what I mean? I wasn't touring. I wasn't doing all of that. And so I had to figure out, okay, how do I live the best and highest version of myself? How do I take care of my adult son with special needs with little or no support? And how do I still stay connected to what I love? And so that's how I went into coaching. I was already coaching artists and doing master classes and things like that. And so I expanded my practice to include, you know, first I thought I was going to help artists, and I still do. And yet what I really found was that my niche and my sweet spot are high net worth women who feel trapped in the lives that they've created. And I was like, I know what that feels like. And I know what that experience is. And I also know that you can show up in a new way. And so this coaching opportunity just took off for me. And I knew that that was the way that I was going to be able to provide the level of lifestyle that I'm passionate about and make sure that I have a fully funded special needs trust for my son. So that was one of the shifts. So I'm doing a lot more talking than I am singing right now.
But you're still doing good stuff, because I'm sure that high net worth women, they get forgotten, because too many people see high net worth people as all okay because they have the money. But as we have actually discussed before this interview, that, you know, particularly women, a lot of high net worth women, if it's not their own high net worth, they've been relying on perhaps a partner, usually a husband, who has been supporting them. And they walk away, and very often they get nothing. So there's fear of walking away from something that could be extremely toxic, and they're not happy. They might have all the money in the world to do everything that everybody would dream of doing, but they're just not happy. So it's proof that money does not bring you happiness.
Absolutely.
Always. Sometimes it does.
Right. It's like the comedian. There's a scripture that says, you know, that I've been abased and I've been abound. And there's a comedian that did a riff on it. He's like, look, I've been rich and I've been poor. Rich is better. And yet, what happens is, like you said, because people see them being supported by the other person. But the flip of it actually is most of those women have supported those men to become who they became. They created that safe space for them. They created that place where they could be who they needed to be. And what happened in the process, though, is they forgot who they were. Those women forgot who they were. They made themselves small to help somebody else become big. They did all of these things. And there's the other part, like you said, because people have this perception of people with money. It's like, oh, she must be fine. Well, how could she dare want more? And there's even an inherent guilt for those women who say, well, people think I have everything. How can I ask for something different? How can I ask for something more? And yet, and still, the whole thing is there's a part of you, there's something very specific, I believe, that each of us are here to do, become, and accomplish. And if you deny that part of yourself, you're like smothering who you are. And so there's no way that you can live a fully actualized life if you're not living fully and authentically as yourself. And that doesn't mean that you have to blow up your life. I mean, for me, the best and safest and healthiest decision was for me to leave, because there was no hope of it changing. And, you know, and it's like, well, girl, couldn't you have figured that out faster than 30 years? And, you know, there's a whole lot of things that go into that. But the day that you figure it out is the day that you've made the decision. And that's how you move forward. And that's how you serve. And that's how you begin to incorporate the best of yourself back into your life.
That's so beautiful. I love that. So just going back a little bit, you said that David Emmanuel was your second child.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe, is it a sister that he has?
Yes. Yes.
How did she react to her brother when he was having these seizures?
Actually, all things considered, she did incredibly well, because of course they were really, they're only 2 years apart. And so, and she had this almost sixth sense. You're talking about being connected. There would be times that they would just be in the room. We would be in the family room and he's on the floor just playing happily. And she would say, "What's wrong with my brother?" And I'd look, and he wouldn't, I mean, he would be fine. He wouldn't be seizing. But within moments or minutes, he would start seizing. So she was tuned into him like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really, really was. And so one of my big things in this process was like, I don't want her to get lost in his diagnosis, you know? And I did everything that I could to make sure that that didn't happen. And yet at the same time, I mean, how can it not happen in some ways when, you know, this little girl sees, you know, paramedics and firemen busting through the door, coming to, you know, rescue him, or being in the intensive care wards. And I was able, because of my being able to be calm and rational, she was able to be present with him, not in the emergency room, but by the time we got in a room. And so she was like, "Well, what's that? Or what are they doing to my brother? Or what's that in my brother's nose?" Or whatever. So we did as much as we could to include her in that process, and yet also celebrate who she was with her amazing gifts. She's a triple threat. She's a phenomenal singer, dancer, actress. And basically hers is dancer, actress, singer, I would say. And so, you know, supporting her as an artist, supporting her dreams, and, you know, you do the best that you can, and then you do all of that you can. And you're open to, and this takes time, I will tell you, you're open to, you are going to miss some things. You're not going to get everything right. And her journey is her journey. So some of those things that we try so much to protect people from is part of their journey. It's part of who they need, what they need to go through to become who they need to be. And obviously when you're a mom, you're in fix-it mode at first. And sometimes we don't learn the release part for years. And, you know, that's when you have to be present with, I did the absolute best that I could. I showed up in the best way that I can in that moment. And so therefore, having done all that I can do, I have to stand in that and be okay with the outcome.
I hear you, because as I think I told you, my daughter also is triple threat and also dancer, actress or actor, singer in that order. And yeah, the letting go when you know they've, you know, been rejected again and this kind of thing, it hurts, but you can't say anything. But you, as you say, you've got to let them go through it. It is the career they've chosen, the career that they love. That's the downside of it. So, you know, you can't protect them. You cannot protect them whatsoever. You just have to be there for them to help pick them up and move them on to the next time.
Yes.
And yes, and find their journey. And that journey might be, you know, like sort of huge, big success, say in, you know, in the West End in London or wherever. Or it might not be. It might be doing something else connected with that. And it doesn't matter, because it's all success.
Yes. Yeah. That is such a powerful statement. It is all success. You know, living our life, going through our journey, being who we're meant to be, it is all success. And, you know, just being able again to find that balance. And so like a lot of my work is around productivity, but not in the checking the box productivity. I actually have a course, it's called the Peak Performance Productivity Masterclass. And like I said, it's not about checking the boxes of then do this and then do that and do that. It's about being. How do you show up for yourself? And for these women, you know, that I serve who are transitioning, how do you get reconnected with that dreamer? How do you awaken your dream again and show up for that part of yourself and create room in your life to be the best part of yourself? Because that shouldn't be lost and it shouldn't be forgotten. And, you know, and especially like a lot of us who have gone through corporate world, and it's like, okay, again, fit in this box, do that look. And yet still there's a part of you that's like, I just need to live. I just need to be free, and finding a way to allow that creativity to ultimately support you, to ultimately be your source, because your job is not your source. A man is not your source. Your source, you are part of source. So reconnecting with source, knowing that you can create whatever life and reality that you choose when you're tuned in and tapped in.
That's so good, because just too many people don't know that. So it's so beautiful to hear that. With all your experience with David Emmanuel, what tips can you give to other families who might be also experiencing the same issues with, you know, multiple children? One has special needs and therefore could take away attention. What would you say to other families about how to deal with all of that?
That is such an amazing question. And we could really do a whole show just on that. I think the shortest tip, or the greatest little nugget I think that I can share, is just be present in the present. You know, don't worry about, oh, I missed that. Oh, I didn't do that. Oh, you know, and be open to, you may not get anything done today. You may not get anything done today. And especially like for me, because seizures in David Emmanuel's case are so unpredictable. There's no focality. There's no aura. There's no warning. So they come up out of nowhere. And so I may have all these things planned out and then he has a seizure. So it all goes out of the window. So if I'm staying attached to, oh, I didn't do this. I couldn't get that done. I didn't, you know, then you're not in the moment of present with, oh gosh, he came out of the seizure. Oh, I'm so grateful that he's going to be okay. So just finding that moment of being able to be grateful, even in what seems like a hot mess, and giving yourself grace, creating space for you to do it. And while I know for some people, it's like, how do you do that? Or that's not practical. And what I will say is, if you learn this, if you develop these skills and these techniques and these tactics, it will give you more room. It will give you a greater sense of accomplishment. It will help you be more successful, because I was able to build my business. My business excelled during shelter in place in America. Like my business grew like more than I ever experienced or expected. And it was because, one, I was present with what do people need right now? And so I created a product to help them. And then I was present with, okay, my husband has gone ghost. And so I'm not going to get any support from his father. So I could be angry and frustrated, and rightfully so. I could have been all of those things, but that wasn't going to serve me or David Emmanuel. So I had to be present with, you know, thank God my business is doing well. Thank God I have a roof over my head. Thank God that I can make sure that I'm here for him and I can be here for him. And I'm still doing what I love and I'm still serving. And this is the other thing, I was transparent the whole time. I was telling my tribe what was going on. And I wasn't, you know, I hope I can say this, I wasn't bitching and moaning. I was saying, this is my life right now. This is what I'm going through. And so it gave people a sense of, this is a real human being living real life. And if we allow ourselves to be that, we are living life as it shows up, as it comes up. So be present with that in the moment. And give yourself some grace and some space to let life be life and let you be you. And keep knowing that the fact that you are serving and caring for your loved one, that's a win. That's a big win. And so be present with that win.
That's beautiful. I love that. I just find it so enthralling what you're saying. But I get the feeling also that you've had an awful lot of personal growth that a lot of people come to later in life or find by chance. I get the feeling, I might be wrong, but I do get the feeling that you've come to that. You've always had that, or you found it or discovered it at a very young age.
Yeah. I have definitely done the work, absolutely. And you're right, I've always been curious. And so, and I'm an, oh God, I am an avid reader. I love, love, love reading. And so I've read books all of my life. And so I've learned a lot. I remember one time a friend of mine came to my home and like, I have books everywhere. And he said, wow, all of that knowledge lives in you. And what an amazing thought, because even I didn't think about that. And yet being open to learning and growing. And my biggest lesson was learning how to ask for help, because that was not an area of strength for me. So it was like, okay, I can pray through this. I can meditate through this, all of those things. And then my body manifested illness. I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. And when I first got it, it was debilitating. I almost couldn't move. And what I learned later on was the higher Zen part of me was not acknowledging the anger that I was experiencing in the dysfunction of my marriage. And so that was like one of the first clues that it was really time for me to evolve and move forward and move on. And so again, it's about being open to the clues and open to the dialogue and staying curious. And you referenced it earlier, listening to your inner voice. Your voice will tell you what you need. I tell people all the time, and this is my lesson from RA, if it doesn't come out of your mouth, it is going to show up in your body. And so while I thought, okay, I'm good, I'm calm, I'm zen, da 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 da, and my body said, no, you're not, you know, no, we're not okay. And so being present with not being okay, because it's very easy for me, especially at this stage in my life and being a coach, it's easy for me to sit here and tell you, well, you do this and you do that and you do that. And yet, if I don't tell you about the bottoming out, and I don't tell you about the pain, and I don't tell you about the lows, I'm not giving you information that is going to serve you. I'm here to serve. And so in my serving, it is telling the truth, telling all of the truth. And so, no, I'm not perfect every day. And yet what I am is committed, like I said, on being the best and highest version of myself on that day. And just to take it one step further, we were both talking about our daughters being in the arts. And artists can be so self-absorbed and neurotic, you know, in a way that doesn't serve us. Like, oh, my high C wasn't placed in the mask. And it's like, you show up on the stage as prepared as you can be. And whether the performance is amazing or mediocre or actually awful, you showed up as the best version of you in that moment. Live through that moment and let it go. Because if I stay on like, oh my God, last Wednesday, I was just horrible. And it's Friday night and the curtain's going up. Like, girl, people who are in that audience on Friday night don't care about what happened on Wednesday. They're here to see you Friday night. Show up.
I love that. I truly love that. Roz, it's been an absolute total delight talking to you. I really, really kind of hear everything you're saying. I'm nodding. Nobody can see this because you just got our voices, but I'm nodding. I'm like one of those noddy dogs that sit in the back of the bus. And I love everything that you have said. And Roz, thank you so much for being with us on this podcast today. And I just wish you and David Emmanuel and your daughter so well. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been just a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for this conversation, because it means so much. So, you know, again, thank you for showing up as the best and highest version of yourself, giving people an opportunity and a resource and a place to come and hear a conversation. So I honor and celebrate you, and I thank you for the honor of being here with you.
Thank you for listening. And don't forget, if you like this episode, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a 5-star review. It really helps. See you next time.